From NPR and WBUR, I'm Deepa Fernandez in Alameda, California.
I'm Robin Young in Boston. It's Here and Now. What's going on in Israel? Remember hundreds of thousands of Israelis protesting Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, his plan to weaken the country's Supreme Court. He put that plan on pause for this month. But then there were Israeli raids at the Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan prayers, Israel said in response to rioters. In response to that, dozens of rockets fired from Lebanon into Israel, the largest barrage since the 2006 war between the countries. Israel responding with strikes on militant targets in southern Lebanon and Gaza, which sparked Palestinian attacks in the West Bank and Tel Aviv. That recent convulsion has calmed somewhat, but the combination of an ultra-conservative government, a backlash from centrist and leftist Israelis, and the Israeli government's response to Palestinian issues seems like a new moment. But what moment? Let's talk with Aaron David Miller, senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's a former State Department Middle East analyst and a negotiator in both Republican and Democratic administrations. Welcome back to Here and Now.
Robin, it's a pleasure. Always happy to be with you.
Well, we love hearing from you. And let's start with Benjamin Netanyahu. We're familiar with him. He's the conservative prime minister, despite corruption charges that he denies. But an arguably more influential player in all of this is the ultra-conservative minister of national security, Itamar Ben-Gvir. Who is he?
Itamar Ben-Gvir is a religious Zionist, a man whose reputation precedes him. Too radical for the Israeli Defense Forces, convicted of incitement on at least one occasion, and now with a portfolio newly created on his behalf by the Prime Minister, Minister of National Security, he has a tremendous authority and a budget to do all sorts of things, frankly, things that are not going to calm the situation, either between Israeli Jews and Palestinian citizens of Israel, or in the West Bank and in the Jerusalem area. I must say, though, Robin, that we're not dealing with the same Prime Minister Netanyahu that we worked with for decades.
We'll talk about
changed.
That. Yeah, talk about
he's
that.
He's changed.
Yeah, go ahead.
He's a risk-ready, in part desperate individual who is on trial 3 years in the running for bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. The traditional sort of risk aversion that has characterized Netanyahu's policies, particularly when it comes to projecting military force and taking risks in other areas, seems to have dissipated. And he appears to have gotten himself into quite a bind with regard to this so-called judicial reform, which is not really reform. Most Israelis would agree that the system needs reform. This is a judicial revolution, which is designed to fundamentally alter Israel's democratic political system,
sure,
and give the government tremendous power to pass legislation with no independent judiciary to review it.
Right. Well, then, you know, we're hearing that Gvir and others pressured Netanyahu into what you're saying is arguably the most unpopular measure in Israel's history, this changing of the courts, reducing them. Are you saying that it's actually Netanyahu who's at the forefront of this, in part because he's about to be tried?
I think that's certainly part of it. Look, Robin, Israel's had five elections in 4 years. I mean, it's certainly not a perfect democracy, but you'd think five elections in 4 years, that means a dysfunctional political system. And the reason it's had five elections in 4 years is that Benjamin Netanyahu would not agree to allow his Likud party to participate in any coalition in which he'd not gotten a majority. And part of the driving force is not just to return to power, but it's to find a way through judicial action or governmental action, should he succeed in passing at least 100 pieces of judicial legislation designed to reform the judiciary, to definitely figure out a way to beat, immunize himself, or delay his trial. There's no question but that that's driving him. So it's fine to say that Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich are holding the prime minister hostage, but he maneuvered himself into a situation that he wanted. And now, in fact, he is partly a hostage to their radical and fundamentalist demands.
Yeah. Look, what is this doing for sort of the underlying story of the region, which is the tension between Israelis and Palestinians? And we'll just say it's a tension that goes back thousands of years and 70 years. You know, the land being divided by the UN through wars, through conflicts. Now we have increasing tension over the border with Hamas, potentially Hezbollah forces in Lebanon. Talk about what you see happening in Israel and who this Netanyahu is and how that's impacting those tensions.
Look, I think the Israeli-Palestinian situation is going to get worse before it gets worse. And the reason is because you've got a perfect storm. You've got a 56-year-old Israeli occupation. You've got the most right-wing fundamentalist government in Israel's history. You have Hamas and independent Palestinian organizations newly created, actively planning attacks.
Can I hold you up there for a second? Can I hold you just for a second? Hold that thought.
Sure. But
we're understanding that some of these groups that are forming are much younger Palestinians who are tired of the groups like Hamas. They don't think they're acting fast enough or doing enough.
No question about it. In fact, last May, in and around the northern Palestinian city of Jenin, you have a number of groups, the Lion's Den, the Jenin Brigades, which are not have no organizational affiliation. Young, frustrated, aggrieved, largely Palestinian young men who are angry not just at the Israelis, but angry at the organizational embodiment of these Palestinian groups, particularly the Palestinian Authority. And I think whether it these groups probably don't present a major security threat to the state of Israel, they do, in fact, sort of help perpetuate not a cycle of violence. This is not a cycle of violence. This is a systemic interaction between an occupier and the occupied, both of which, frankly, both of whom have legitimate needs and requirements that somehow need to be met, and they're not going to be met. Because you need at least three things, Robin, in order to right the situation and give it any chance of a negotiation leading to an end of a conflict solution. You need leaders on both sides who are not prisoners of their politics or their ideologies, but masters of them. You need a sense of ownership where these leaders care more about finding a way to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict because of their own needs and requirements and those of their peoples, not in response to external pressure from the United States, the UN, or the international community. And finally, you'll need a mediator that is fair, honest, and prepared to apply both honey, reassurance, and vinegar, disincentives, in any negotiation. And you don't have any of those things.
Well, I just ask you, you just made me think of Jimmy Carter, you know, who was one of those people at one time. Do you see that mediator?
You look, Jimmy Carter deserves an enormous amount of credit, but remember, he was negotiating a peace treaty between two established states. You now have a situation in which you have the state of Israel, a functional democratic polity, however imperfect that democracy may be, and you have a Palestinian national movement seeking to become a state. It's a fundamentally much more complicated situation. And frankly, right now, the Biden administration is neither willing nor able, frankly, or interested in the kinds of sort of heroic diplomacy. In large part, I have to be honest, if I were advising the president of the United States right now with Russia and Ukraine, with a rising China, he's about to announce his intention to seek a second term. I'd say, Mr. President, you can go at this if you want. But the fact is, you're not likely to succeed because the ownership that is required on the part of Israelis and Palestinians is just not there.
Okay, real quick, we have a minute. Netanyahu said earlier this week that normalizing relations with Saudi Arabia might be a giant leap toward ending the conflict. And Israel's already opened diplomatic relations with Bahrain and the UAE. Anything there?
It'd be great for Israel and Saudi Arabia and great for the Gulf. But frankly, it's not going to advance the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. That's generated and determined by factors that are uniquely related to the conflict in which, sadly, tragically, Israelis and Palestinians now find themselves in.
Boy, conversations, once again, where you have to throw up your hands. We're not throwing up our hands. We're going to do this again. Aaron David Miller, Senior Fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Aaron, thank you as always.
Robin, it was a pleasure.